Headwear.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman. Exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from VBSR is underwritten in part by The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. The University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. National Life Group, which lives its values every day to do good, be good, make good. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, and ski erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, moving surplus foods from farms to those who need it. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy innovation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. And Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development, as well as over 750 Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility members. Here is David Goodman.
Welcome to this week's Vermont Conversation. It's October, which for many people means Oktoberfest, the annual celebration of all things beer. But we're going to celebrate Oktoberfest with a Vermont twist here on the Vermont Conversation and talk about Vermont's craft brew revolution. To fill in the many faces of Vermont craft beer, we're going to be joined later in the program by Dave Yinker, the owner of Blackback Pub, a craft beer pub in Waterbury, Steve Cook, a deputy commissioner with Vermont Department of Tourism and Marketing, who, among many hats, looks at beer tourism. But first, in this half hour, we're going to start off. We're joined in the studio by John Kimmick, the founder of The Alchemist Brewery, and Steve Polowasik, the owner of Vermont Pub and Brewery, which is Vermont's first brew pub. So to get that long view, let's turn first to Steve Polowasik. Steve, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Well, thank you very much.
So as the first, the pioneer, Vermont Pub and Brewery opened in November 1988. What was the beer scene like in Vermont way back then?
The beer scene pretty much didn't exist in terms of craft beer. The only beer that was available back in the mid to late 80s in Vermont were the big three at the time, Miller Coors and Bud. And Greg Noonan had introduced the community to a new product, a new beverage, and it was real beer. Beer made with, tourel malt and fresh hops. And it was an exciting new time in Vermont and in Burlington.
So at that time, as you say, you know, people are drinking Bud and Coors. And they don't even have a taste for the kind of beer that you're making. So you're starting from, you know, the foundation level.
Pretty much. We were at scratch one for educating our customers for the first 2 or 3 years as to exactly what it was that we were producing and that we were offering for, you know, mass consumption in terms of a higher quality a beer. It was the beginning of what we know today as craft beer lists that people read when they come to a new bar or a new brew pub. This was something that was brand new, and the education of our customers was tantamount to the success of the burgeoning industry.
How do you compare drinking a Bud to drinking some of those first beers that you were brewing?
Well, it was pretty much night and day. It is not to say that the Budweiser beers or the Coors beers, it's not like they were bad. They were just very different. And the craft beers, in turn, were also very different. They were more full-bodied. They had more flavor. than the beers that the big three were making. They were just more flavorful, and they began to match up better with foods. And as our niche in the market was brewpub, we were offering food and a beer that would complement each other.
So against this backdrop that there really was not a taste for the kind of thing that you were creating then, what was the response back in the late 80s to craft beer?
I would have to say that a lot of people were puzzled by this new beverage that was becoming available, but a lot of people, their curiosity drove them to being more experimental, being more interested in something that was new, or at least if different. It's not necessarily new. I mean, everybody in Europe was already making good beer, which actually leads me to a side area that in 1988, when the Vermont Pub and Brewery opened, there were 22 beer styles that were recognized by the Association of Brewers, the then Association of Brewers, is now called the Brewers Association. It's located in Colorado, and they have spearheaded the whole craft beer movement. But today, there are over 100 styles. So there's something to be said at that point in 1988, where we had 22 styles of beer. Today, we have 100. People were just very, very intrigued by trying something new, which is great.
So, do you still sell Bud?
No.
When did you feel confident enough to drop the Miller, Bud, and Coors from the offerings at Vermont Pub and Brewery?
Well, actually, we never sold those. But we were selling Catamount, the Catamount products, which was a startup craft brewery in White River Junction back in 1987. We were offering those, and we were offering some exotic European beers, some Belgian beers, some German beers that were available. And also, way back in the early days, Lawrence Miller had started up Otter Creek. And so we were selling those beers as well. So we never really sold the Bud and the Miller. There was just no room on the on our taps for that.
So you started in 1988. When did this thing start to take off?
I think it started blowing up around 1995, maybe 1994, where we saw the first influx of additional breweries popping up across the country. In Vermont specifically, I think by 1995 we had about 6 or 7 microbreweries making great craft beer. And then through the late 90s into the early 2000s, it just really blew up.
So where do you see it going?
Well, I see it capping off at some point. We already had one fallout in the, I think, somewhere around 1999, year 2000, there were a lot of breweries who just bottomed out. And we're seeing another growth spurt through 2012 through today, where there has to be another bottoming out. Once that point has been reached, I think that we will see the highest quality breweries, the breweries that are maintaining the status quo in terms of again quality. That's where we will end up. Less breweries, higher quality.
Okay. Well, Steve Polowasik, I want to thanks for giving us the long view of Vermont's craft beer movement and joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Steve Paul Wasik is the owner of the Vermont Pub and Brewery. It is Vermont's first brew pub and opened in 1988. If you want to join the conversation, you can call 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Before turning to our next guest, who's in studio, John Kimmick, the founder of The Alchemist, yesterday brought some interesting news that's relevant to our conversation here, and that is one giant brewer could soon own nearly half the world's top beer, top beers. Yesterday, in a $100 billion deal, the world's three leading brewers, Anheuser-Busch, announced it was planning a takeover of its main rival, SAB Miller. So Anheuser-Busch makes Bud. Miller makes, of course, Miller. And they'll also be joining forces with a global brand, InBev. This new entity would own 18 of the world's 40 most popular beers by volume. So half of the world's global beer supply will come from one company. The various names have been proposed for this company. Behemoth, Mega Kega, Hopportunity. None seems to have stuck so far. But against this backdrop, there is one kind of exception to this consolidation of all these brands, and that is this. 44% of Americans between the ages of 21 and 27 have never tried a regular old Budweiser. And that's because of the craft beer movement. And John Kimmick, our next guest, is part of the problem for this mega brewery. So, John, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Hi, David. Thank you very much.
So how does it feel to be the thorn in the side of one of the world's largest global multinational corporations?
Oh, I take great pride in being part of the problem for them. To hear statistics like that, it is eye-opening for sure. You know, when you're doing what we do, you tend to keep your head down and just keep on working. But, of course, when articles like that come out, it kind of brings it to the forefront of your mind. And that statistic about 21 to 27-year-olds having never tried Bud, that at its core, that is such a great success for the craft beer industry, because that number is only going to climb. You know, kids today are no longer looking through their dad's fridge and finding Budweisers. They're finding craft beer, and forever their palates will be expecting flavors like that. You know, once the genie has been let out of the bottle, there's no going back. The world is not going to continue to gravitate toward the light American lager.
And, you know, another statistic that really surprised me is that craft beer's growth, there is now more craft beer sold by volume than Budweiser. And that happened back in 2013. So in the 2 years since, this has only continued. But, you know, even in the report of that mega beer merger yesterday, they singled out the craft beer market as being kind of the Achilles heel of this, you know, huge consolidation, that they're actually losing ground every year. They're selling less Bud.
Well, they are losing ground, and I think that's why you see these consolidations. These are massive corporations. Their concern is the bottom line. That is their driving force. And so, of course, when their backs are up against the wall, that's when you start seeing these massive businesses that's their only choice, is to get gobbled up by somebody bigger. That to me, is the beginning of the end. Those are the death throes of an industry. They have attempted to keep up with craft beer. You see Blue Moon. You see other large breweries taking a stab at craft beer. Some of these breweries do it very, very well. You know, they're like the brewery that Coors maintains at Coors Field out at Rockies, at their ballpark. They brew amazing beers out of there. It's a little pilot system. But even as they do that, that they'll never have the legitimacy that a craft brewery has. They might be able to brew to that level of execution. They certainly should be able to. They're all masterful brewers of what they do. But it doesn't matter. They don't have the credentials to be presenting those beers. They stood behind this other stuff for so long. What are you going to do now? All of a sudden, you make porter? It's like, well, I have all of these other porters that are wonderful. Why would I even support a behemoth like that?
So talk a little bit about your story and how you got into brewing beer that led us to Hetty Topper.
That's a long story. It's been 22 years in the making. When I was in college, I discovered craft beers, and it's interesting because the very first craft beer that I remember having was Catamount Porter that Steve had mentioned. It came to my brother-in-law. He's a member of Beer of the Month Club, and that was one of the beers. And I remember going over to his house, and he pulled that out, and I was just fascinated sitting there looking at the bottle and seeing that Catamount and the wording and the idea of Vermont. And so I was born and raised north of Pittsburgh. I had cousins that lived in New Hampshire, but I had never been to the Northeast. But there was something so powerfully drawing me toward that. When I look back in retrospect, it's interesting how little things like that come into your life and have a huge impact down the road of how they give you a little nudge in a different direction. So when I had that first craft beer, I was blown away. And immediately, I wanted to try others. And so, of course, this was in 1991, maybe. I had just turned 21. I was free to go out and experiment as I saw fit. And there were craft beer bars popping up here and there. Compared to what is available now, it was woefully inadequate, you know. But what they had, they were beers that you'd never seen before. And so as I delved into the world of craft beer, I developed an instant passion for it. And I was a business major at Penn State, and I knew I didn't want to wear a suit for the rest of my life. That was probably the only thing I was sure of. Second thing I was most sure of was that someday I wanted to be my own boss. And when craft beer came along, that was just the perfect thing. That's what I needed. That was the focus and the direction that I was looking for. And so from that point on, everything was focused toward achieving that goal, you know, which I didn't even know what my goal was at that point.
So we're talking to John Kimmick, the founder and owner of The Alchemist, which makes Hetty Topper, among other brews. How did you kind of get your feet wet in brewing beer?
Before I address that, I will make one correction. That is co-owner and co-founder.
Co-owner with Jen.
Of The Alchemist.
Who's been in here.
My wife, Jen, is an amazing part and absolutely at the core, the most essential part of what we do at The Alchemist. Together, the two of us have a very clear idea of what we want to accomplish. And we met when I had my first paid brewing position, which was head brewer at the Vermont Pub and Brewery back in 1995. So Greg had hired me, and he kind of let me loose in the brewery, which was great. At first, he kept a very tight rein on me. He must have recognized potential in me, or else he never would have given me that position at the age of 24. So I felt as though I had a very big motivating factor in I wanted to succeed at what I was going to do. So I did whatever it took to guarantee success. Long hours, a laser focus, and hard work. Greg taught me an amazing base of knowledge. So much of what we do now is based on what he taught. Whereas other breweries were opening up and throwing money at a project, he was the voice in the head that said, if you don't need to spend it, don't spend it. Money will come. Get it built the way you want to for as little as possible. So among those ideas, he was teaching me how to make great beer. So after several months, when he was confident that I was doing what he asked, he kind of backed off and gave me freedom to start doing other things. And that's where things really started to come together. As Steve was touching on with trying to train people's palates to accept these new flavors, I saw that as my role as head brewer at the Vermont Pub and Brewery. There was a stable of beers, established recipes that were open to me to brew, but I had the freedom. I don't know if it was necessarily the freedom as much as it was me taking it upon myself to say, well, okay, here's Greg's IPA recipe. I'm just going to bump these up. I'm going to add a little more of this, maybe a lot more of this, and we'll just see. And inevitably, they would come on tap, and he would really like what I was doing down there. And so it gave me more and more freedom. And it was an amazing place to learn my chops.
We're talking to John Kimmick, the co-owner and co-founder of The Alchemist. And we have a caller on the line, Stanley, calling all the way from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Stanley, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you. Hey, John. Stanley here. I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about Pittsburgh and Iron City and its role in how you make beer and your beer life.
This isn't Stanley P. Kachowski, is it?
Yeah, from the DVE, not from the DEB.
I had to correct myself several times this morning. Iron City holds a very dear place in my heart, and it holds almost a permanent spot in my refrigerator at home. There are bottles of it in my fridge right now, actually, as we speak. It is, to me, Iron City is one of those beers that represents blue-collar, hard work, union-made, amazing for what it was. It was identified with the city of Pittsburgh. Having been a native of Pittsburgh, I take great pride in the fact that Iron City was produced there. Sadly, it is no longer produced there. But I got to say, they are now brewing it in La Trobe, which is where Rolling Rock at one time had been brewed for many, many years. And as we were talking about consolidation of breweries, there was a time when Rolling Rock got bought up by Anheuser-Busch, and they moved the production to New Jersey, closed down that brewery. It was a very sad day. Another sad day was when they decided to close down Pittsburgh Brewing Company in Pittsburgh, which is where they had made Iron City for many, many, many decades. So it was tough, but then it got taken back up. They are now brewing it at La Trobe in the old Rolling Rock Brewery. So here it is, this cool thing, where there was such an amazing thing going on in La Trobe that now it's been replaced with something so near and dear to my heart. It's great, and I don't think Iron City has ever been better as it is right now. So it's a great time even for a regional brewery like that. And, of course, you know, it's not a Pittsburgh sporting event without down in a couple irons.
Okay, well, Stanley, thanks for your question. We've been talking to John Kimmick, the co-owner and founder of The Alchemist. We're going to be joined by some other guests to talk about Vermont's craft beer revolution in just a few minutes after the news. Stay tuned.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is pleased to provide David Goodman's Conversations with underwriting from the University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, National Life Group, Concept 2, The Alchemist, by Green Mountain Power, and Let's Grow Kids, as well as over 750 Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility members.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. This is our Oktoberfest special, which we are celebrating by talking about Vermont's craft beer revolution. This conversation takes place against the backdrop of a part of the brewing world going in the other direction. Yesterday it was announced that one giant brewer could soon own nearly half the world's top beers as the merger of Anheuser-Busch, the maker of Bud, Miller, and the maker of a number of European brands were combining in a $100 billion deal. And yet, against that backdrop, we have some sobering facts, which is that craft beer now, the sales of craft beer barrels now exceeds the sales of Budweiser in the United States, and nearly half of people under the age of 30 have never tasted a Bud, and that's because of the craft beer revolution. So talking about it with us, we've had John Kimmick, the co-founder and owner of The Alchemist, makers of Heady Topper. And we're now joined by Steve Cook, the deputy commissioner in the Vermont Department of Tourism and Marketing. Steve, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Hey, thank you very much. It's great to be here with you guys today.
So there is a new niche of tourism now that I don't think we could have talked about a decade ago, and that's beer tourism. So what does this look like?
You know, it's really amazing how we've seen beer tourism really make an entrance over the last decade and how it's impacted overall tourism within our state. We get, you know, it started with a trickle when Vermont craft beers really started to make their way outside of the state and capture the attention of people around New England. To now, it's literally a waterfall of interest in from consumers who want to visit Vermont, partially because they want to tour our craft breweries, visit our local pubs, and really get the hands-on experience to see where these amazing products are produced.
So some interesting little anecdotes that just I've heard. I was talking to somebody, a friend in Burlington who does an Airbnb, and he said that more than half of his guests, out-of-state guests, are here for beer tourism. Other interesting little anecdotes, there is now the beer passport. So this may be part of what's driving that tourism. Talk about what the beer passport is.
Well, you know, the beer passport is a really great program that the Vermont Brewers Association organized, where it really encourages people to visit every single brewery around the state, try a sip, collect their stamp, and in the end, be able to hold that passport like a trophy and walk away with some pretty cool gifts from the association, which is really great. But, you know, the other real interesting thing about how beer and the interest in craft beer, I guess the craft beer revolution really has impacted Vermont is, you know, we've really tried to work to capture that younger audience to visit Vermont. We want to capture them today when they're in their early 20s, in their late 30s, to come and experience Vermont in hopes that we can keep them as a return visitor and perhaps even sway them to say, hey, I'd like to live in Vermont sometime, not only to be closer to the mountains, but to be closer to all these amazing beers and amazing food as well. And that's always been a real marketing challenge for us. How do we capture that attention and break outside of, you know, adventure sports, fall foliage, the great food? Well, beer has really been our one angle that we've really been able to work towards to capture the attention of that audience. It's like those old signs in advertising that says free beer. Now that we've got your attention, come to Vermont. And, you know, we've been able to take advantage of that in terms of promoting these amazing events that are happening around the state.
So what kind of events are we talking about?
Well, you know, it really started with the Vermont Brewers Festival, which has gained amazing attention and interest, selling out over the last few years.
This is the one down on the waterfront in Burlington?
This is the one in Burlington. This is the official Vermont Brewers Festival organized by the Brewers Association. But you find around the state, just this past weekend, there was a festival in Winooski organized by Four Quarters Brewing. You know, these are popping up and cropping up all around the state. And it's a great thing for travel because it's actually bringing people into the community, attracting people to experience this, and ultimately put heads in beds and get folks to extend their stay or stay for a long weekend.
Do you have any numbers to illustrate kind of the growth or the size of the beer tourism here?
Well, this is interesting. So what we found is that tourism spending continues to grow. About $1.8 billion are spent in tourism spending-related activities throughout the state over the course of a year. But what we found most recently is the spending continues to go up, but we've seen a bit of a retraction in the amount of overall visitors that we're seeing. So that total number of visitors going from just about 14 million, about 14 million to 13.7 million visitors. They got to be spending that extra money somewhere, right? We've seen a lot of growth in spending in areas around restaurant, which has been very strong. Hotel rooms continue to be strong, but other purchases like attending events, like purchasing products during their visit, are a really big contributor to that. And you know, we have to speculate that Vermont's craft beer industry has something to do with that increased spending by our visitors.
We're talking all things Vermont craft beer. You can join the conversation by calling 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. John Kimmick from The Alchemist, the stories about people making these pilgrimages for Hetty Topper are now famous or cult classics, but for those who don't know, how crazy has it gotten? What are some of the stories that stand out in your mind about what people are doing to get Hetty Topper?
People do funny things, that's for sure. I think I should go back further, though, and tell a quick story about when I was looking for a location for the Alchemist Pub and Brewery, which is where the Prohibition Pig resides now. And as I was sitting at my job at the time, eating our employee meal, I was making conversation about how the fact that I think we had found a location to open up our brew pub. And one of the guys in the break room heard me say that it was going to be in Waterbury. And his response was, nobody goes to Waterbury to drink. And I take tremendous satisfaction in having proven him so, so very wrong. It's a phenomenon that has created its own life. You know, people like to throw the word hype around, and that's a word that has always bothered me very much, because in a way it sells short the hard work that myself and my wife and all of our employees put in to producing the beers that we produce. For so many years, it was just me doing everything by myself in that basement. Now, it has created this amazing opportunity to surround myself with these incredibly talented people that share in our vision and share in our idea of what it means to be a success. And we produce a very high-quality beer. We don't put anything out that door unless it holds up to my standards, which are very, very high. It is truly satisfying to have been forced into the situation that we're in, basically forced into it through happenstance, if you can call it devastating flood happenstance.
Well, maybe you should just fill people in on what you're talking about there.
Well, we had the pub for 8.5 years, and one Sunday night it all got washed away. And we went from having that to having nothing.
Tropical Storm Irene.
We were fortunate enough, I was fortunate enough, to have listened and accepted what Jen was telling us for a bit of time was that we should do something else, that we should also build a brewery to produce our beer and be able to package it out to customers, which we never did at the pub. I fought it left and right because I was up to my eyeballs in what I was doing and I couldn't even wrap my brain around it. But of course we went forward with it and put everything behind it, and thank goodness we did, because that's what saved us.
The cannery opened the same week that the Alchemist pub was destroyed.
2 days after the pub was destroyed, we canned our first Eddie Topper. So
I don't think serendipity quite does justice to what that
it meant. It doesn't. It was a very surreal time. But what I see the popularity of Eddie Topper, I place that squarely on the quality of the beer that is in that can. I don't care what your marketing is. I don't care what any of that is. Customers are very knowledgeable, and they're very fickle, and they're very picky, and they are just waiting to see you slip. You know, I think it runs rampant in our society. As much as people want to see people succeed, they almost love it when they fail a little bit more, which is kind of a sick thing, but that's something that we will never let happen. It just will not happen. So when I see the growth of it, I see it as a direct reflection of customers recognizing top-tier beer.
So as I'm telling that story about all these mega beer makers, you know, gobbling each other up, and now one company consuming half the world's beer or being responsible for, I imagine you get offers all the time for The Alchemist.
I wouldn't say all the time. You know, I don't think anybody would ever be so bold as to flat out offer us that. I think our reputation precedes us, and our independence, our very strong independence, and our opinions on what a business should be. You know, is that the American dream, isn't it? You know, for somebody to start a business and get to the point where they can just sell it and retire. That may be other people's American dream, but that is not ours. Our American dream is building a business that we take pride in, that other people take pride in, that our employees take pride in, to be able to create jobs, outstanding jobs at that, not just any job, but a great job that is going to be a lifetime job. That's what our American dream is. And so when I hear these big breweries getting bought up, it's I would expect it. But goodness, I would never sell like that. It would have to be some sort of horrible tragedy that forced us into doing something. We would never consciously make that decision.
So one of the things we're hearing here is the idea that nobody comes to Waterbury to drink beer. We have Dave Yinker is the owner of Blackback Pub, a craft brew pub in the heart of downtown Waterbury. Dave, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks for having me.
So what's been your experience with this idea that nobody comes to Waterbury to drink beer?
Oh, if only they knew. It is just truly amazing on a daily basis, getting up in the morning, never knowing quite what to expect for the day, knowing that you're going to be busy. And the warmth and openness of our out-of-towners is just it's amazing. It sustains us. It propels us forward. It's just a pleasure. I have had the privilege of meeting people from all over the world coming here to Waterbury to drink beer, to experience the whole climate.
Tell us a little bit about Blackback Pub.
Well, my wife, Lynn Mason, and I, we bought 17 months ago from Rick Benet, who was a friend of ours. Rick sold to us. It was always one of our favorite bars, other than The Alchemist, of course. We'd always come. We live in Waterbury. And I've had 25 years of bar experience in my past. was selling cars at that time. My wife had had about 20 years in the hospitality industry, had worked in the insurance business for 27 years. We were looking for something. And when this came about, when this opportunity came about, we jumped. We were so into it. It was just a dream come true. It's been a pleasure ever since. It's just been a blast.
And what do you offer at Blackback?
Well, we have 22 taps. I have 32 seats. Those 22 taps are filled by the best beers, and I offer John's fine selection of cans with the Focal Banger and Heady Topper. Those are the only beers we sell. We sell the best beer we can get our hands on, the best local.
Give us a few names.
Well, Hill Farmstead is huge. The Alchemist, of course. Sean Lawson. We have the newcomers. Well, we have the Lost Nations of the World, the Zero Gravities. We have Fiddlehead. We have the Foley Brothers. We have Frost Beer. We have, you know, just to name, go on and on and on. You know, Hermit Thrush. Just some incredible brewers. We have brewers coming from out of state to come to Waterbury specifically just to get exposure to the inner sanctum that we have here. It's really an incredible altar for folks to come to.
And you inhabit, I've lived in Waterbury for over 25 years. I remember the pub that used to be in the space.
Yes.
It was a very different kind of place, and it seems to me this is sort of emblematic of the evolution.
This, here.
Yeah. I mean,
this is so not the old pub of the old days. And now we get that customer who comes in, who is passing through town and reminiscing about the good old days of pool games and fights. It's not that anymore. It's just incredible to see their faces when they walk in. They go, whoa, and just the transformation that's taken place. But the whole town has just transformed. This is not a gin mill town anymore like it used to be.
You know, the Boston Globe has been coming up here and doing stories. We seem to be the beneficiary of the Globe's basketball writer. Their Celtics beat reporter is also their beer writer. And he seems to have taken a real shine to, of all places, Waterbury.
Yeah.
Because I've seen several articles that he'd done. I don't know if it was him or somebody else that dubbed us Waterbeery.
Mm-hmm.
But it was either him or somebody did the count that in the main traffic light of Waterbury, within a 50-yard radius, there's something like over 100 beers taps on tap?
Something like that, yeah. It's really amazing. Yeah, I would say so.
So you have a unique bird's eye view. You're seeing who comes to Waterbury to drink beer? What do you see?
Well, today I have a visitor from Chicago who's in the craft beer business. He's one of the top reps. He's going to be coming to the Blackback Pub. He does this on a yearly basis to pay us a visit. He's become a good friend. He's helped us. Always incredibly knowledgeable, and we always get to talk beer, which is awesome. And so that's fun. You know, that's what we have, such devoted fans who come here who have such passion for what they this activity of drinking beer and appreciating fine beer. It's humbling. You can't judge a book by the cover when they walk in. Everybody's just so happy to be here, and it's really incredible.
I know that just this past winter, I mean, kind of a typical scene at the Blackback, which, as you say, is a real favorite stop for locals as well. It's out of towners, some guy in ski clothes, and I pull up next to the bar, so the conversation always, oh, where have you been skiing? And he explained he'd just been in Killington, which is an hour and a half south of here, but he'd come to Waterbury because he'd read or heard, like, this is the place to have a beer. So he, you know, there are a lot of places one could get a beer between here and Killington, but the, you know, we should point out, as John can bear witness, that this town was just 4 years ago underwater, and the downtown was devastated, and now rising out of the ruins is this remarkable, very improbable kind of rebirth.
It's amazing. Well, I remember going to the Alchemist, and John and Jen had set such a great standard. So anything that happened in this town being so close to it, had to have a very high standard. That's kept up, and we try to keep growing on that on a daily basis, and that's spread out to everything that we do. And our visitors appreciate that, and they see that, and it's pretty cool.
So Steve Cook, the Deputy Commissioner of Vermont Department of Tourism and Marketing, are you able to say that there is a, I don't know, how do you describe Vermont beer to the rest of the world, since that's part of your job, is to talk about Vermont to people who've perhaps never been here?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I really think that because every person's palate is different. Every person has something unique that they're looking for. But the thing is that what's being produced in Vermont from our craft brewers, there is something that reaches everybody's unique palate. And really, Vermont's beer speaks for itself. What we try to do is show the broad, amazing experiences that you can have when learning about how Vermonters produce their beer, what types of beers are produced, how they can participate, get involved, meet some of the most amazing brewers that are out there. A couple of things that we've done, which have gained huge attention, is we've actually given had promotions where we were promoting a trip to come stay in Vermont, spend 2 days with a master brewer, with some golf in the middle, staying at a small, unique lodging property. We have never had so much attention for a promotion that we were giving away, and that was completely focused in a different market to promote Vermont as a destination for craft beer. And it worked phenomenally. And we continue to see growth like that. We continue to see interest in consumers who want to experience that. We've seen individual tours that people have begun to develop, entrepreneurs that are touring visitors around the state to visit each one of these unique breweries. And that it's an incredible asset for us, because it takes a lot of the kind of the scary part of traveling to a completely different place, you know, traveling from different brewery to brewery, where in fact now you have a guide who's bringing you to each of these locations, explaining what the different beers are, introducing you to the people who are making it. These are incredible assets for Vermont that are helping us to continue to promote that real experience.
Is there, you know, in the same way that, you know, we know that, you know, one of the mystique of Heady Topper is that it runs out. It's not an unlimited supply. So is there an issue of how much you can promote beer in Vermont because of the very small scale of production here?
Speaking of which, for our listeners out here, there was a Heady Topper delivery truck out front when I pulled into the DEV offices. Just a little inside tip. You know,
I think those folks have already gotten it tweeted and in other ways that information.
You know, there's really a balance, and we understand that. Like any quality product, there's a balance, and I think that it's supply and demand, and the less supply our craft brewers are focusing on quality, not on mass production, but like John says, he's invested in his product, he's invested in their brand, and they're going to do John and his team are going to do everything they can do to continue to be successful, and that's not necessarily based on growth. It's based on producing quality products, and that's really what sets us apart from a lot of these other establishments in other states that where their craft brewers suddenly go from producing a couple hundred barrels to producing tens of thousands of barrels a year.
Well, we have just a minute left, and I want to give the last word to our master brewer himself, John Kimmick from The Alchemist. John, where do you see The Alchemist in, say, 5 years from now?
Here in Vermont, primarily. It's funny that you brought up the idea of that there's not a lot of our beer out there. That always kind of irks me, because in reality, we make 9,000 barrels a year. The most I ever made at that pub was a little bit over 400 a year. So the idea that we don't make much is totally mistaken. We make a lot, but we sell it all close.
Okay, it's important. On that note, I want to thank you all for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation. John Kimmick, the co-founder and owner of The Alchemist, Dave Yenker, the owner of Blackback Pub in Waterbury, and Steve Cook from the Vermont Department of Tourism and Marketing. Thanks for joining us. You can hear us next week at 1 on the Vermont Conversation or online anytime at VermontConversation.com.
I wish I had known.
You have been listening to Vermont Conversations with David Goodman, made possible by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and its 750-plus members. Additional support is provided by Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. The University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oors, indoor rower, and ski erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, moving surplus foods from farms to those who need it. National Life Group, which lives its values every day to do good, be good, make good. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy innovation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power, as well as over 750 Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility members.
America have suspicious software. AP's Tom Krischer has more from Detroit.
That software could help them with their emissions controls. The Environmental Protection Agency is looking into that, and if it finds that this thing does indeed help them cheat on emissions controls,